You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes!
The Vandercoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
It's a David Samson Thursday, but we're going to do this under the guise of Friday. So look, we're not with ESPN anymore, and we kind of make the rules, and you obviously all saw what happened yesterday at the U.S. Capitol. So we're going to double our efforts today, quite literally. Also, because we hired a security guard and we can't afford him for day two.
All right, this is a true thing that's happening around here. We did not plan on doing a show on Thursday because there are a lot of logistics that go into everything we're doing around here and a lot of expenses, and I am leaking money. And Mike is not lying to you when he says, look, we've had to go get some Navy SEALs and stuff to make sure that we have the proper security given what's going on in America and given that many of you are here, at least in part, because you believe that I specifically am going to talk about this situation in a way that now has freedom and will allow us to be the freest, truest version of our show. So, because legitimately, I don't want to pay for security 2 days in a row, we're going to do 2 days worth of shows in one day, bringing you all the characters. For all of you who fear, oh, they're losing their ESPN stuff. They're losing their smart people. ESPN is going to block them from having access to the MENAs and stuff. We're going to bring you nonstop smart people we love to talk about stuff that is difficult as America changes in front of your eyes and as you see a freedom threatened that finally scared the Republicans shitless enough to actually lead, to take off their masks because of the Frankenstein monster that they've created, reaching into the morgue to make all of these parts, and now it turned on them and you saw what happened yesterday. Finally, our country's leadership united against the monster because they were scared shitless of chickens coming home to roost. This is what was wrought. This is what was going to get here because of everything you saw happening over the last 12 months to us and elsewhere, because I've got something for that shit-stained Clay Travis in a second who wants to sit it out now when he was having Trump on his infomercial podcast, Dixie Vodka Cheap Shit, just getting Trump to foment this base. And then walks away and saying, hey, I never said anything about violence. No, man. No, you guys did in all your code. I worry about the subtle guy who could do the Trump shit. Because if you are willing to follow that Frankenstein shitbag to where you followed him, that's what you get yesterday. That's what Malcolm X was talking about when it was chickens coming home to roost. When he says, imagine black people being there. Imagine Black Lives Matter if you think black bodies would have been rolling down and cops are letting these people in. Like, imagine how black people viewed that yesterday. Where white people are allowed to f-ing storm our place, storm our freedom. And it's the first time that it gets the Republicans' attention because they're scared. And black people are like, if that was Black Lives Matter marching on that house that way, there would have been 1,000 dead bodies. Never mind arrest. There would have been 1,000 dead bodies in the middle of your freedom. So that's what we're going to be talking about over the next couple of days. And it's going to be sharp. And we're going to bring in David Samson here awkwardly, because I don't know the order of things. We're going to be talking to a lot of our favorite people today.
So, David Samson, congratulations, our Thursday tradition. You will be the first episode released today. We're going to essentially give you two shows in one day. The Thursday-Friday experience, all in one Thursday. David Samson will kick things off for us. Sam Van Gundy is scheduled to join us. John Amici, Aaron Rodgers. We got a lot of lines in the water. It's a very fluid situation, but we want to rise to the occasion for you, our audience. So, David, after all of what happened last night and Dan's intro to this, you're obviously opinionated. You were deeply affected, like many people were, from what you saw last night. Please share your thoughts.
I just feel we have a responsibility. We have a platform, and Dan started that. I don't. You were so confusing with how you're releasing, what you're releasing. It's hard to know, will what Dan said be released before people are hearing this? Will it be after people are hearing this? Will they have no idea what the context of what I'm now saying is? I don't know. But what Dan is saying is there was an emotional boil over, and there was an inflection point last night. And the problem is I spent all night and I didn't sleep. I literally didn't sleep a minute because I needed to make sure that I took this platform seriously enough and said something meaningful enough that would try to give context to what I was watching. And thinking about today's episode of Nothing Personal, which I'm doing after this with you, although I think it'll be released before this is released, who really knows?
All right, listen, David, stop for a second. We will explain the timing of things to people as we move along. Let's try and do what we normally do while also just giving context to how, look, a lot of us stood in front of the television yesterday horrified, and you saw what it took to make these McConnells and these people who have been feeding this monster, Pence finally looking like a goddamn leader instead of a lackey, and what it took is all of them being totally scared shitless and being reminded, oh, this is what it looks like when you arm these people physically and have them threaten freedom, and then the cops are working with them to just let them into the place. Instead of, man, it's infuriating. So anyway,
but it actually still wasn't enough, though. So you keep saying that this is what it took. And now you're hypothesizing that all of a sudden they were scared shitless enough that everyone was sort of scared straight. Well, if you watched all last night, the objection still happened. Just because there were six people objecting instead of 14 people objecting, or five instead of 11, or they chose only Arizona, but then stopped with an occasional, you know, Pennsylvania, maybe a Wisconsin. What it's not the change that you think is happening because Frankenstein was created and now all of a sudden they saw what they created. I don't agree with that. What I do hope for is maybe there's a chance that it, to me, it's the black side of it that is far more important than the Clay Travis side of it, than the, it was a coup attempt that was not going to be a orderly transfer of power. All I was thinking all night last night is how the police would have reacted if there were one person of color, just one, who was trying to break into a window. Would they shoot first and ask questions later? The answer to me is 100% yes. Where was Trump bringing in the National Guard? At first, he wasn't doing it. And Maryland and Virginia had to bring in their people to support the police and the Capitol Police. And what goes on in the Capitol is very confusing in terms of law enforcement. You have the Metro Police, you have the Capitol Police, you have the FBI, all sorts of different, who's in charge? And what bothered me yesterday is I during the Trump years, Trump was in charge. He was the president.
No, but David, Pence was in charge. He took control of the National Guard. Like he did. Look, he has been a lackey.
We know that, Dan. What we know is he was the one on the call. He was the one on the call. That doesn't mean that he was the one in charge.
Okay, so what is your theory there? What do you think happened there? And we will be talking to people over the course of the day who were there, people who have done their research on this subject. What were your thoughts about what happened and what you saw unspool on television last night, where we're all dying to hear from Pence and McConnell, to hear if they will turn on Frankenstein and defend freedom in the face of their fear?
But you're defining that as them withdrawing their objection. You're defining that as saying that we are going to go with the ordinary transition of power, and now you're all of a sudden saying everything's okay. The fact that they changed, that Pence looked presidential or vice presidential and actually did his job as president of the Senate. Do you realize that January 6th is a day that no one ever focused on until yesterday? But January 6th has been going on for every election that you've been alive and I've been alive. And it was a nothing day. It's perfunctory. And what Trump had done leading up to this moment was making people think about this day in a way that not one of his supporters or one of his detractors ever thought about. And when he incited, and that's why the words are being chosen carefully, inciting a mob is when you give people who really have no direction, they have no true understanding of how government works, they have no moral compass, they're waiting for someone to tell them how to think and what to do, like frickin' Germany. So Trump incites them and says, go to the Capitol.
But before that, David, before that, stand down and stand by. He's been talking to him. It's fine people on both sides. He's been talking to them throughout Black Lives Matter. He's been talking to them. Wait for this moment. Watch the ballot boxes. Make people not go. It's rigged. It's rigged if I lose. Only if I lose, it's rigged. I'm throwing just garbage and shit in every court in America. I'm threatening democracy and freedom. And they think, my people, my mob thinks that if I tell them to put on a mask, I'm threatening freedom. While this is how they were threatening freedom the entire goddamn time.
But not headed toward January 6th. I'm talking specifically in a micro way about what happened yesterday when they chose purposefully to storm the Capitol. And explain to me, and what bothered me about, like, from the 3 to 3:30 a.m. time slot, is why was our law enforcement not prepared for what Trump had so obviously telegraphed was happening? And there was a period of time where there was milling. Don't forget about the
David,
milling period,
David,
which
he
came
is,
before
David,
the
he,
storming
David,
period.
David, he has taken a hatchet to everything that resembles leadership and protocols and checks and balances.
Yes.
He has taken, and this is why I'm worried about a more subtle creature. This, he's given them the blueprint. This is the apes and the oafs and the mob. This is not even the entirety of the Republican Party. It's not. This is a small fraction that has been unleashed on behalf of the Republican Party that worships at the party of Trump, which is the dictator party. It's the party that threatens democracy. Like, that's what's happened here. Trump was never a Republican. Trump is a guy who is about Trump. This is the Trump party. And the fact that this dope, this oaf, this clown, this thief, this corrupt businessman who hasn't even been good at business, that bankrupts everything. The fact that this idiot, David, you're from New York, that this idiot was able to mobilize this, it scares me for somebody who's actually a polished presidential leader now that he's been given the entire keys to the blueprint.
So the question you then have to ask yourself is, if it's just the Trump party, and on January 21st, in theory, there is a new party as the president, what is the Trump party going to do then? And he gave a little clue in his concession tweet done through a different Twitter account when he started telegraphing what his plan is for 2024. And so the question that you have to ask is, will the Trump party be able to stay glued together until that time? And I don't have a good answer for that. And I don't think any of us do right now. That's what scares
me. No, but David, what does he anoint? Look, David, this is what's happened. As Fox News has birthed this, and he's turned on even Fox News because Fox News isn't him enough. He wants propaganda. Fox News found some nuance last night somewhere, some nuance, because they're scared shitless too. They enabled all of this shit by making it a propaganda machine that continued to allow him on and again.
Until the opinion shows started in the evening, and then we were right back to shit stain America.
Yes, and so what's happening here, David, is he's setting himself up by creating that fund where these people are actually giving him money because they think he has been wronged, because he keeps throwing things out there that are conspiracies and not facts, and somehow all these people believe it. What he's doing is he's creating the next Fox News as a reality television star. He'll probably have a channel for the next 4 years where he ends up birthing whatever it is, the thing is, that can do his work, because he's going to be damn near 80 years old then. Like,
oh, this is a hustle. All of this, the legal fight is just going directly into his pocket. He is setting up his next business, and he's taking advantage of some of the dumbest people in the
country. He's going to try and create the next monster for 2024 if he can't do it himself. He's too selfish and narcissistic to imagine. His every solution to every problem has always been more Trump. That's his every solution. So I'm not even thinking he's thinking he can't do it himself as a dictator at 80 years old if he rebuilds his reality show and learns whatever the lessons are and, incidentally, doesn't end up in jail because he's pardoned his entire mafia family, and they now have no rights to get up there and plead the Fifth Amendment. They've got to just get up there and lie if they're going to do it. So I don't know if he ends up in jail or in 2024, or if he ends up mobilizing these people for a better candidate. David, I'm telling you, my greatest fear wasn't what we saw yesterday. My greatest fear is that somehow Biden were to get this virus and die before the 20th, because then it's just a calamity where you've got a black woman in charge, and these people are even more agitated.
So I don't think he can get the virus, knock on wood, and die before January 20th. It is now January 7th, so we have 13 days. But let's go back to the money side, and I think that it's important for people to understand those who were storming the Capitol yesterday, I want to know the total amount of donations, political donations by that group of people. It's de minimis, right? These were almost hired, if you will, shit disturbers who were taking selfies and treating it as though this was an afternoon activity. The money that you're talking about that Trump gets is from actual business leaders in this country who need his policies in order to further line their pockets. That is the majority of the tens of millions of dollars that he raises, not from the people who go break windows and storm capitals. So you understand, in my opinion, what he's doing is creating an army of idiots. That doesn't make him an idiot. He is an idiot because of the way that he believes he can win even when he's lost, or he's an idiot because he is racist, or an idiot because he's attracted to his daughter, an idiot for myriad reasons. But getting the people and the way he and Giuliani did it, that was extremely purposeful. There were no CEOs in that crowd, Dan.
Attracted to his daughter is one I have not heard a lot of.
Well, that's I mean, there's Shakespearean play in there. Yeah. I think that if he ran into his daughter in costume, like at a place, that he would want to, that he would try to have sex with her, would be my son.
Well, that's another thing that's on the resume, like close to a pedophile is another thing. Like, can you imagine? I was talking about this, David, yesterday. Can you imagine if someone were president of the United States and black and had the resume of bankrupts a bunch of different companies, doesn't manage his finances very well, you know, bailed out by his father, possibly with casino money, depending on what reports you believe, never pays taxes, hides his taxes from you all the time, defends the Russians at every turn in a way that's super weird, even as there are bounties on American soldiers, like never runs against Russia somehow. I want you to imagine a black guy doing all this, mobilizing his people, the idiots in his group, to toward violence and everything else. Grab them by the pussy, like many kids by many women. What the f, David?
But then how do you explain the number of women who vote for him? So you have to realize that the things he says and does, it's not all of a sudden blanket offensive, because there are people who don't care about that sort of behavior, that sort of language. For example, there's one issue voters, and I've had terrible conversations with other Jews, of which I am one, who vote for Trump, who voted for Trump again. Listen, I've been pretty honest about this. I voted for Trump in 2016, and I did not vote for him in 2020. I never had the intellectual bandwidth to even conceive of the possibility that his presidency would go the way it went between 16 and 20. From a policy standpoint, there are certain things that I agreed with in terms of large government, small government, powers to the states, et cetera. But what happened over the course of almost immediately is I realized that what I hoped would happen wasn't going to happen, and that he wouldn't treat this as a reality show, which he ended up doing. But on the other hand, there are Jews who I respect who are very intelligent, who voted for him in 16 and voted for him in 20 because he was far better than Obama in terms of his support of Israel, far better than Obama in terms of pro-Israel and I want to say Jewish causes, but that's really a terrible way to say.
No, but David, it happened with Cubans too. You saw how Florida flipped because of what happened in Miami, and it's at least in part because Trump was just better to Cuba. A lot of one-issue voters, better to Cuba, better to whatever was the communist representation of freedom and the American dream, better than Obama and the Democrats ever were, who were normalizing relations and weren't doing the dictator stuff. So Jews and Cubans, when you get aligned with people and heritages that have imprinted you, it's where we separated from Masvidal. That was hugely uncomfortable. We enjoyed the relationship with Masvidal, and then it became dangerous. David, look, man, when you talk about the corporations, and I got to be careful about like how I talk about this, but any of you who have been watching the specifics of what it is that has happened with us, and now that we're free, we can speak about this more freely. I want you to know that right before the election, at a time like I know you guys have been watching what happens around here. We've been made a political tool for 10 years, social justice warriors, the woke crew. In sports, we've been fighting in our little corner against all of this stuff, all of this garbage that has existed for a while. And so now that we are free, I can tell you that right the week before the election, Biden's people were reaching out because they wanted me to moderate, to journalistically moderate a discussion among Cuban Americans with Joe Biden. And I wanted to do that very badly, just to be a journalist, to moderate it, not to go out there and gasbag, just to moderate it. And because I wanted to do something to counter what Masvidal was doing, where he's running all over the state with total freedom, also, you know, as part of the UFC and everything, like in a similar position to mine as a Miami Cuban American with a big platform that, you know, that the UFC gives and the ESPN gives. And he's running all over the place supporting Trump. And we like that relationship. It serves us for Stugatz, but it serves us for Miami. We like the Miami Street Fighter. But I've had to separate from all of it because of that conflict that I have had journalistically, ethically, culturally. And so when you talk about Jewish causes, I don't think you should apologize for saying, look, this is something that imprints me, because I've broken away from my people on this because of what's happened. And it's caused great damage to, like, people I grew up with, and families have been torn apart by what's been happening. And I, too, David, didn't see this coming. I was saying I'd like a reality star anarchist for the comedy of it, for the comedy of it. And he gave us the comedy, but I was denied being able to do the comedy around it. Like, he gave us a lot of funny things because he's telling people to drink bleach and everything else. You are not wrong to feel that part is conflicted for you to vote for Trump because he's the Republican Party has been better to Israel.
You've been around a long time. Did you actually think that there could be comedy without tragedy?
It helps. Our show has been a lot better the last 2 days.
I'm talking about the country.
I'm talking about us. I'm talking about it all revolves around us, David.
Well, you said that you thought that there could be great comedy for 4 years. Did it ever occur to you the concomitant tragedy that would most surely happen?
David, you did not think it would be like this. You did not. You voted for him. You couldn't have. I sure shit didn't vote for him. Like, in wanting an anarchist,
can you make sure you clarify that so you don't edit it and screw it? I want to make sure I'm clear because I talked about it, nothing personal. I hope there were obviously enough of me because Biden won. I was always hopeful that there'd be more of me, and there were, who voted for him in 2016 and then did not vote for him in 2020. And that was maybe what helped. And the struggle that I had no struggle voting for Biden in 2020. I want to be very clear. The struggle that I had is, how could I have been so selfish in 2016 to believe that I was smart enough, so delusional that I was smart enough that what he would do would not be hurtful or tragic, and that he would be able to rule for 4 years, maybe eight, didn't know, and that he would be a Republican, and that he would be someone listen, there's been both parties in my lifetime, that he would be a sane leader. The problem is what happened from the beginning. That's why what happened yesterday was not a surprise to people who are paying attention. What happened was he started on this road. He was flagging this from when he started running for re-election 2.5 years ago. Some would argue he started running 4 years ago. He was flagging the fact that he would not accept any election results other than him winning. And when you have a group of followers who are not smart, who are willing to follow you into a tunnel like Animal House, into a alley where they start stomping on each other with banned instruments, what happens at the end of the day is you get out of control. And yesterday was the culmination, except now at 5 to 5:30 this morning, Dan, it occurred to me, what if January 20th is the culmination? What if this was just the introduction to the inauguration? And then what if that's not the culmination? What if during the course of Biden's presidency, while we thought there would be an orderly transition of power, what if, in fact, we do have war happening, civil war happening, and people are calling me crazy on Twitter and everywhere else, thinking you're worried, getting your panic room? But this has been happening.
No, David, this is
one minute at a time.
I understand, and you're not wrong there, okay? And I don't mean to flip, although this is going to happen a lot over the next couple of days, the Cuban exile card out there. But the reason that I value the specifics of freedom the way that I do, the reason for that was hand-me-down. It was sacrifices made by others so that I would never have to make a sacrifice. And I thought that freedom was taken a little bit for granted here over the last 4 years in supporting this. And It was the behavior of people who have only known freedom versus people who have to flee freedom to find freedom or fight to find freedom. And so as I've watched some of what's happening here, and it's totally horrifying to me on a personal front, the thing that gave me hope last night is all those people were afraid enough that of what happened. You've got all of these rich people from privilege. I mean, I know that they're not totally united yet still, but you've got the McConnells and the Pences all of a sudden scared shitless enough that these people will actually work together. Now, I don't know if they're competent enough to actually lead well so that we have the proper security on the 20th, because the first coup attempt failed, and you have to be ready now for another one, and Pence has to seize the military and everything else, because you can't let that happen again. But it's just perfectly symbolic, David. It doesn't happen until they're scared shitless, while black people are in the streets all the time in their desperate, impoverished neighborhoods telling you, hey, that police force already works against us. And yesterday when they're watching on television, how is that police force letting people into the building and not arresting anybody? How? Never mind. Where are the rubber bullets? Where the are the rubber bullets when you're not even arresting people, but you were doing it when Black Lives Matter was out there like that? If I were the black people are so goddamn patient, David. So we get so much better than that from them than we deserve when we're killing them in the street and they don't do shit like yesterday, defending and following that particular bag of shit.
I don't want to add to that except one picture that I think people should look at, and that was what happened on the steps during the Black Lives Matter protests when there were rows and rows of armed policemen or whatever category you'd have, and they were ready to shoot first and ask questions later. And you're crediting black people for having more patience, and I wonder if it's even deeper than that. If it's they're so used to the absolute racism that they face, they're so used to how poorly they're treated that they don't expect any different. So you say that they're giving us more than we give them. That's obvious. But the question is, have we held them down for so long, for so many hundreds of years, that when there's an opportunity to truly change the narrative, that they're too scared to because they're just not used to having any sort of say or power? I don't know. It's a great question, and it's something I want to address on Nothing Personal, and I think that CBS is going to be pissed off about it. But and it's hard for me as a white person to do it, but people think by definition, because I'm white, I can't. I was scared, and you know how scared I get. I was scared in where I was last night. I was scared that something would happen to me. I was scared that people would storm my castle and that there would be a lack of control because I'm not armed. I don't believe in guns.
Dave,
I don't have
Dave,
guns.
We hired security. We can't afford security tomorrow. We are taping a bunch of stuff all at the same time and throwing it all at the audience at once because everyone got a little bit scared yesterday.
Everyone got scared, and to bring it back to what David said about the photos from the officers, if you can even call them that, because oftentimes they're unmarked, unidentifiable. You have no idea if they are actually a cop or part of some sort of militia. It's super ambiguous. And they show up to these peaceful protests looking for a fight, dressed for a fight. This rally yesterday didn't spring up on anybody. It should come as no surprise, because if you're still riding with the president, you are of the thought that this election was rigged. And when they tell you, when Giuliani says we're going to have a trial by combat, when the president himself says, I'm going to march with you, by the way, he didn't, down Pennsylvania Ave and go to the Capitol, no one's ready for this. No one's ready for a fight. I couldn't help but think of the federal building in Portland, Oregon that was so important to protect, because
yeah,
if you start
it's infuriating.
Torching a
and,
federal
and Fox,
building.
And Fox News out there doing the propaganda for the work on riot, other, fear of other. This is fear of other. This is what's being stirred at every turn, David. Like, it's brown babies in cages at the border. It's the Mexican rapists are coming to get us. We have to it. The platform, David. The platform was a f-ing wall, and then we're surprised that he divides us. He won on the platform of these Mexicans are going to build us a wall so we could be further separated from the other.
You know, for hundreds of years, people have ruled by fear, so I want to make sure that people know this is not unique and new to the United States or even to Trump. This has been going on everywhere. And ruling by fear, that happens in corporations. It happens on sports teams. It happens on the actual field of play. I've talked to players who are actually scared of other players, and it's born out of respect or born out of personality. And so Trump didn't invent this. Giuliani didn't invent this. When you are trying to change something that you know cannot be changed, first you try the legal way. That's the court system. That's all the cases that Trump brought, and every one of them lost. When that doesn't work, then you go to the next level, which is trying to incite enough people that will cause people who can change, like politicians, to object. So that was the next attempt. Then when that fails, then you go into the violence part. And I don't think yesterday was the violence part yet. It was a bunch of idiots taking selfies. And when you ask me what scares me, that's what scares me. We haven't gotten to the violence part
yet. Okay, David, let me before we let you go here, let me just, I don't want to do a reviewed movie today, if that's okay with you. I implore you, though, because we have had an uneasy relationship with you over the years, in that we very much value the content. I consider you a friend. People don't understand why I'm friends with you, given everything that happened in Miami. But one of the reasons that I'm friends with you is because I see more to you than the performer and the entertainer. I see someone who tries to be honest in this media landscape about the giving of content, even if that honesty is ugly. I am imploring you, because our role for the last 10 years has been to tell the to speak truth to power to the people of privilege, and to bring up minorities so that they could have a voice. You have to go on Nothing Personal. You have to speak about this as honestly as you possibly can, and you have to challenge your bosses to, you have to defy your bosses and challenge them to make you take it down, because they're the ones with the FU money. And you need their support. So you have to use that space to challenge them, is the first thing I would tell you. So don't hold back. Let it go and speak honestly. It's the value of the platform. And secondarily, I want to ask you, what the hell happened to Giuliani? Like, what happened there? I thought after 9/11.
If I may, before we transition to Giuliani, I'm sure there's people in their car right now saying, easy for you to say now, Dan. Now, I'm pretty sure, as someone that's produced this show for 15 years, that today would have been gloves are off. I don't give a shit what you say to me. I'm talking about this, sans cursing, the exact same way. It would have been interesting. But what do you say to the people that are probably screaming at that to their device right now?
Okay, well, look, you can question Stugatz. If Stugatz were here, he might be doing it himself. It is very easy to do now with no freedom and you know,
with freedom.
With more freedom and tequila drinking yesterday at 9 a.m. on the show, it is much easier. And lest you think that I'm just grandstanding, lest you think that this is just woke social justice warrior, you know, beating his chest, there are compromises that need to be made when you have to protect a group. There are compromises that are uncomfortable in order to get some of the things you want. And it did not serve people I love here who have babies now to do what we did until we did it. And so I was hurting for a long time, because I wanted very badly to be able to get in on the discussion and use the platform to talk about what was happening in this country. Not because I saw this coming, because I don't think anybody could have seen this coming, but because as America's leading Hispanic sports voice, I wanted people to understand that freedom was under siege. And I totally, like, that's fair criticism. David, I'm sorry to talk so much during your segment, but that is fair criticism of me today. If you said to me, and that honestly, hey, principles guy, hey, guy who shows us, you know, virtue signaler, you could have done this. You could have done this when you had the bigger platform. Right. You'd be. It's a fair criticism.
Right. And I, Dave can speak for himself here, but I kind of recoiled as you were virtue signaling and telling David Sampson, you tell your bosses I'm doing this anyways, because there have been times that our hands have been.
But David's only responsible for David. That's the thing. And I actually know what David has in inside him in terms of convictions. David wants these fights. Let me stop speaking for you. I feel like I know you, but I feel like I'm speaking for you. So please take the floor. I'm sorry.
No. Could I just rewind to one thing you said? Because I think you may want to walk that back. You said that you didn't see any of this coming. And I'd really like you to go back over your last 4 years and the struggles you had with ESPN and watching the country and thinking about what happened in Cuba, how is it that you didn't see this coming?
Because my parents were the ones who endured that. For all I'm saying about you have to fight for freedom, I never had to. My parents were the ones that fought for freedom, and all the stories are borrowed and hand-me-down of what the threats look like. But it's what we recognize. It's why I made Roy's day when he was going to talk somehow about my mother and communism, because it has been apparent to anyone who's from Cuba that over the last 6 months or year, David, has been a more overt and obvious threat where it looks like state militia and the government is threatening freedom. That's not what the first 3 years looked like. It was just a bombardment of scandal and lies.
David, if I may, I know you directed that question to Dan, but I was sort of surprised, not in the weeks leading up to this event, because at that point I saw everything. The wool had been lifted from my eyes, but I was born and indoctrinated in a religious conservative family, and I thought what happened yesterday was the stuff that happened in parts of the world that we would go declare war against because of their lawlessness,
other countries,
and their opposition to democracy.
That's not our country, David. Even with everything you've seen lately, it's what
and I would be called ignorant when I would befriend the likes of Will Cain and people that were warning me the entire time, like, don't do this. He's pulling the con on you. And I'm like, well, I like to believe people are inherently good. And I get surprised by what my friend is saying on television, sort of gaslighting it. And people kept telling me, you shouldn't have been surprised. Now, I think I should be allowed to be let down by a friend. I think I should be allowed to be let down by a party that when I registered to vote, I was a part of because I was this son of a Cuban exile. And it was just ingratiated. And we've gone in ad nauseum about what that whole dynamic is. But I always thought it was not us. I always thought it couldn't happen to us. And here we are, the laughingstock of the world. It happened to us.
Mike, I'm a registered Republican. Like, the last two elections, I've had to sort of change just because I didn't give it any thought. I was just Cuban. Like, people would be shocked to know that about me, that I am, because I've never talked politics and never been about my politics. I've just told you about what the Cuban experience is. And, you know, what the black experience is, even though it's not mine, borrowed from, you know, black media members, black friends who were constantly, you know, telling me the things that made me a player apologist for 30 years because I was defending things that, you know, the white media generally wasn't defending.
Before we get out of here, because we need to carve out some time for Stan Van Gundy, I want to see the floor to David Samson, because I feel like we've cut him off.
We have talked a lot, David.
At nearly every turn, because we have all this emotional buildup. So, David, please bring us home.
I'm going to tell you that today is a day that you've got more responsibility than I feel you've ever had, including when you were a journalist and only writing, and much more so than the platform you had at ESPN, because while you may not realize it, that your audience now believes that you can say truly exactly what you want on any subject. And so when you choose your words of how you are describing today, they will carry much more weight than they ever have. Because even the least cynical amongst us believed that you had some sort of filter, some sort of governor on what you were doing. And I hope that you take advantage of what you've worked so hard to do. And asking me to do it is slightly disingenuous. It catches me off guard when you do it during a show on the air as though I am wrong for possibly having a governor that you lived with for so many years. And you saying snip, snap, after being a president of a team for 18 years, after telling your entire audience that you're not even supposed to be friends with me, and then lecturing me saying, you better use your platform to make sure that you give truth to power. I found that to be disheartening in terms of my preparation for the show when I already didn't sleep all night trying to figure out how I'm going to put it all together,
Dave,
knowing that I do have the governor that you don't have. So I hope that you hold on, Dan. I hope that you take advantage of the opportunity that you have today and show me how I was supposed to do it after you don't listen to the show for yet another day.
Okay, fair enough. All of it fair criticism. I'm sorry if I've upset
you. Played yourself.
I did play myself. He is pissed off now, and I don't blame him. It is my fault. If I may, Joe, because I know you haven't slept, and I know it's an important day for you, I would simply remind you that you are a person who runs 7 marathons in 7 days. Hold on.
Thank you, because that's really hard to run 7 marathons in 7 days. Even you could do that.
Hold on. Okay, 7 marathons in 7 days.
I doubt that.
On 7 continents. Okay, I just want to...
Is this your Gipper speech right now?
Yes, yes, because I've hurt his feelings and I want him to go into this fight. Yes, David?
You haven't hurt my feelings. You've just shown that you don't understand the fact that you today are in a different chair than you were in 72 hours ago.
Okay, forgive me. You have called me correctly on my blind spot, and I deserve you biting back at me. I'm sorry that I lectured you. I'm sorry that I sermonized you because I was drinking tequila at 9 a.m. on the air, and you're wearing a jacket right now in this Zoom call, even though a jacket and a dress shirt on this Zoom call in a very professional environment
because I'm taping nothing personal shortly.
Okay, and so, I apologize to you for handling this the way I let's start there. Okay,
I forgive you.
B, though, I want the audience to understand something about you and who you are. So it's not just 7 continents, 7 days, 7 marathons. You also built the entirety of a stadium, and it was every detail was something that you built, and neither of these tasks were overwhelming to you because you are somebody who is very, very willful. This right here is the greatest challenge of your life. These 45 minutes of nothing personal, haven't you told me they leave you more tired than any job you've ever done because you're so responsible for every word? You're out there by yourself. You don't have anyone else with you, and you have things like this. You've got to imagine, you got to be near the edge, but you got to make sure that you don't piss your bosses off too much. But being near the edge makes you a very popular podcast there, so you can challenge your bosses more than the others. Yes or no?
Yes.
So that's where it comes from, okay? So I'm just, like, you're strong enough and willful enough to do this bravely without making a single compromise on the things you believe. Like, you're going to make 45 really good minutes today, and it's going to challenge your bosses, and those bosses aren't going to be able to do anything other than stand down because of how well you're going to do it. That's my Gipper speech.
May God bless you in the United States of America. See you later.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vandercoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.